From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 15th day of February, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkles. He's at AgriVisor in Bloomington, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, they make ethanol there, will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss along the way the income potential for farmers in the state of Illinois this year, last year, and in 2015, too. We'll do that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always listen to us on demand, online, anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. March corn today at $3.78 3/4, 4.5 cents higher than May at $3.86, up 4.25. July, $3.92 5 up 4. September, $3.97 1/4, 3.5 cents higher. And next year's December at $4.02 3/4, 3.25 cents higher. Soybeans, March contract up 16.25 cents, $10.61 1/4, the settlement price. The May at $10.71 3/4, up 15 3/4. July, $10.79 3/4, 15 cents higher. In the August at $10.77, up 14 1/4. November beans, $10.34 1/4, 11 1/4 higher. In January at $10.38 for next year, that's the 2018, at 11.5 cents higher. Bean oil futures down 20 at $33.94. The bean meal up $7.40 at $3.46.90. March wheat futures at $4.54 3/4, 5 1/4 cents higher. May futures $4.68 1/4, up 4 3/4. In July, wheat futures at $4.80. In the soft red, up 4.5 cents. The Kansas soft red, or rather hard red, at $4.93. 3 3/4 cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago. February contract settled 60 cents lower at $116.77 5 for 100 pounds. The April at $113.35, down 65 cents. March feeders were up 27.5 at $124.27 5 and April at $124.05, up 15 cents. Lean hogs in the April contract, 52.5 cents lower at $70.77 5. The May, $75.52 5. The settlement price there, down 42.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is WILLAG.org. While you're at that address, willag.org, you can purchase your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook. It's the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Or you can call this number, 800-898-1065. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on this 15th day of February. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Dale Durkles is here from AgriVisor in Bloomington. I'm here that you've been on the phone all day long, kind of busy there where you are at AgriVisor, I guess.
Yeah, for some reason or other, today was one of those days that I'll classify, I got nothing better to do. Let's call Dale today.
Decided they couldn't plant corn despite the fact it's early in sunshine and weather's coming up, so they called you instead. Did they call
maybe they're still hungover from Valentine's Day. I don't know.
Could be. Well, they could be in love with the markets, at least for the moment. I bet they still want things to go higher. Did they ask you mostly about corn or soybeans?
Both.
Yeah. So which,
you know, the numbers were across the spectrum. You know, it really didn't matter much. And the interest was really both sides of the mix, corn and soybeans, both, you know, and it wasn't any one particular thing. It was more just general type discussion about what's going on. What do you think? Is this an opportunity to make some sales? You know, those kinds of things. Nothing real specific or pointed.
All right. So I've been watching you on Twitter just a bit, talk to you occasionally as well. You've been of a mind the last several weeks, I think, that soybeans have had some upside potential that has been displayed. How much more do you think is really there?
You know, I think longer term, I'm not a bear. I see some ingredients building in the market that comes in part, you know, from speculative money coming into the realm that's going to be supportive. But for the here and now, and as I've been out on the road, and I have been a lot over the last 6 weeks now, but especially the last week, I think this market's really about out of gas for right now. You know, and we've got to remember, we're really early in the harvest right now of a 6 billion bushel plus soybean crop in South America. And it really makes it difficult to move beans a lot higher in that mix too.
You remember when we thought 1.9 billion was a lot of bushels? That would have been out of North America, but you add the two together, and now we have a 10 billion bushel crop in the Western Hemisphere in a single year. That's a lot of
You
soybeans.
know what? It really just says the demand for proteins just is a lot stronger than what people really understand. And that's a story you can just repeat almost every year, in fact.
I think that's the underlying thought that I want to get to, and I believe that's the underlying thought for you on the strength that we've seen in the soybean market so far. But we have to get to a point at some place where demand begins to level off. Can you look out far enough and see that place?
You know, the last time, and I haven't looked at this for about 8 months now, the last time I took a look at protein demand, vegetable protein demand, not meat proteins, just things like bean meal, rapeseed meal, palm kernel meal, etc. When I look at vegetable protein meal on a per capita basis in China, we've still got a long way to go yet. We're nowhere near even matching where we are in Japan or in South Korea yet, especially in South Korea. So I think there's still more upside in this mix at this juncture yet. I don't think they'll ever have the kind of demand base on a per capita basis anyway that we have here in the US, but you know, I could see their imports in this year, they're going to probably stretch pretty close to 90 million ton. No, I could grow them another 20, 30, maybe even a little more yet.
We could do that over time, but let's talk about what happened
Right.
today in Chicago. So, why did we move soybeans higher today after yesterday's losses?
Well, there are really three things in the mix that seem to play into the day today, and none of them are really what I'm going to call huge. The oilseed processors came out with a monthly crush report. It was 160.6 million bushel for January. That was about 2 million bushel more than what the trade was looking for on that report. Also, their ending inventory on bean oil, I remember, was higher than what the trade was looking for. And we'll note that bean oil ended the day lower today. But the oilseed processor report was one thing. Secondarily, we can look, the Brazilian real went to another new high today. And as it works its way to a new high, we're seeing prices in the interior in Brazil, even as prices go up just a little bit here, tend to stay steady, if not slip a little bit lower. And the strength we've had in the real, especially over the last 6 or 8 weeks, has really kind of tended to suppress new selling of beans out of Brazil enough to a point that you're getting some exporters a little bit worried that, you know, I've got commitments on the books to meet and yet producers aren't selling. So that was the second thing. Third, when you look across the commodity spectrum today, and this was probably tied into some things that Fed Chairman Yellen had to say, it seemed like today was generally a buy commodity day because we saw strength across the board in a lot of commodity sectors here today, grains included. So I think it was just a combination of the events there.
December corn for the third day in a row hit or topped $4 and it settled above that today. That was a good sign, I suppose.
Well, you know, the one background feature in the corn market that we've got to work with, especially regarding the new December, is the thought that we are going to plant less acres this year. And, you know, we don't know exactly how many fewer acres we might plant, but I think when you look at the economics, when you look at, you know, finances for a lot of producers being a lot tighter this year and bankers having more sway over what producers intend to plant, that we are going to trim back acres. And when you start trimming back acres and you go back to some kind of a trend yield, you basically look at a fundamental structure for the new crop anyway that's tighter than what we're going to be in the old crop. And that just generally is a supportive element across the board in the market, whether you're looking at old crop or new crop, either one. But with the old crop, we've got this issue that farmers seem to have sold beans readily aggressively this year, which at this point may start to be a little bit positive for beans, but they're still holding a whole lot of corn this year too. And so that's going to be a bit of a restraint on being able to really find some sustained upside vigor.
That's my final question. You could have sold corn at harvest for 310, now at 350, I suppose, Central Illinois or thereabouts. Any reason for producers to think about doing that?
You know, I think it's probably a point at this juncture, if you're still carrying a lot of last year's crop yet, that, you know, go ahead and reward the market. You know, I was looking at Central Illinois cash prices today, and you know, we had a 290 low, actually, believe it, back right at the end of August, and here we are today, probably pushing somewhere close to 360. And so you've put a nice 70-cent rally in the market, and it says, you know, it's going to be more of a struggle to build this thing and continue to move it up, at least easily, unless weather or some kind of production scare comes into the mix. And so, especially those bushels in an elevator where you're continually paying storage on them, hey, I think this is a time to probably reward the market with some sales right now.
Hey, thanks much, Dale.
Good talking to you.
That, of course, is Dale Durkles with AgriVisor. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of February. You're listening to Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. Do visit our website, willag.org. There you can listen to all of our agricultural programming on demand anytime you'd like. And we post most of it there not long after it airs on our radio station. Some of it, like the Commodity Week program, we'll record tomorrow afternoon. Up there by 5:30 to 6 o'clock each and every Thursday, and post it before it ever goes on one of the radio stations. Now, the other item that's there is a way to sign up and get your registration in, pay your $30 per person ticket for the all-day Ag Outlook. It's quick, it's simple, it's really easy to do. Go to willag.org, scroll down until you see all-day Ag Outlook and buy tickets now, and you can do that right there online. That's the easiest way to do it, or you can just call this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. 898-1065. The all-day Ag Outlook is the 7th day of March over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's a Tuesday. Today's agricultural news will start in Washington, D.C., where the House Committee on Agriculture met today to take up cotton and dairy, but the discussion really did surround the upcoming 2018 Farm Bill. The 2014 bill was written back at a time of record highs in net farm income, but farm income since has dropped some 49% from $120 billion back in 2013 to a projected $62.3 billion this year. While noting the budget reduction savings included in the last Farm Bill, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway, a Texas Republican, said lawmakers need to make a different approach to the next Farm Bill.
Critics of the Farm Bill are absolutely right. We did not save the taxpayers the $23 billion that was promised. We saved them $100 billion. We saved more than four times what was promised under the last Farm Bill, and we achieved these savings despite a very severe and sharp downturn in farm economy. Because we asked in the last Farm Bill, when times were good, to cut twice before measuring once, in the upcoming Farm Bill debate, we will measure our requirements first and then determine what kind of a budget we'll need to meet those needs.
Committee's minority leader, Minnesota Democrat Colin Peterson, says farmers are weathering the storm of low commodity prices, but a change he thinks is needed.
If these crop prices stay where they're at and we get an average crop or a below average crop, we got big problems. So we got to keep that in mind as we write this bill. I agree with the chairman that we should write this bill based on what's needed for an agriculture, what's going to work for our producers, and not be driven by some outside budget force that somebody has come up with.
Members of the House Agriculture Committee will begin holding subcommittee farm bill hearings starting February 28th. The Senate Agriculture Committee will hold its first farm bill field hearing next Thursday, February the 23rd. That'll happen in Manhattan, Kansas. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where if President Donald Trump wasn't aware of the concern building on Capitol Hill over his trade agenda, he will be after Senate Finance Committee members hold back-to-back closed-door meetings this week with his top two trade advisors, Peter Navarro, chairman of the newly created White House National Trade Council, and Jason Greenblatt, Trump's special representative for international negotiations. During round one on Tuesday afternoon, with Republican members of the panel, Senate Senators Pat Roberts and Chuck Grassley, chairs of the Agriculture and Judiciary Committees, respectively, made clear how high the stakes are for U.S. agriculture in terms of new market access in Japan and to other lucrative Asia-Pacific markets. I think the message a lot of us conveyed is a sense of urgency, said Senator John Thune of South Dakota after the briefing. If we're not going to do a multilateral trade agreement with Asia, then we've got to start getting bilaterals right away. Well, Pat Roberts of Kansas told reporters before Tuesday's event that he was going to ask Navarro and Greenblatt to specify who is actually calling the shots on trade for the administration and demand an explanation for, quote, why on earth we're not having more of a conversation on a very robust and predictable trade policy. Roberts was a fan of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that Trump has already killed. On the flip side of this same agricultural coin, Senator Roberts says the best thing lawmakers can do for agricultural trade as it relates to the administration is to confirm Sonny Perdue as Ag Secretary, adding that the former Georgia governor would be an aggressive proponent of pushing for farm exports. The committee is still waiting to receive results of Perdue's FBI background check, but there will be a confirmation hearing ASAP once all of the nominee's paperwork is filed, Roberts assures. Well, let's stay with trade in D.C., but turn our attention to NAFTA. Agriculture is beating the drums over White House efforts to redo the North American Free Trade Agreement. And there's real concern Mexico could punish U.S. efforts by limiting exports to that nation. There's little to gain and much to lose for U.S. agriculture in renegotiating NAFTA, according to major U.S. farm groups, who say the deal struck back in the early 1990s was a boon for U.S. producers. Redoing NAFTA, they argue, could sacrifice those gains for trade breaks in other areas like auto manufacturing. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley says Mexico may already be targeting U.S. agriculture.
I just heard that a senator in the Mexico Congress will be introducing a bill, I suppose in response to Trump wanting to renegotiate NAFTA, that Mexico should quit buying corn from the United States and buy it from Argentina and Brazil.
The Iowa senator points out Mexico is the number one U.S. market for corn and soybean meal, while Canada is the top export market for U.S. ethanol. Both countries are in the top three markets for U.S. pork and beef products. Well, up next, a new article from the University of Illinois projects lower farm incomes in the state this year. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Net incomes for Illinois grain farms are projected to be lower this year than last, if this University of Illinois estimate holds, writes agricultural economist Gary Schnitke on the Farm Doc Daily website. The weakening financial position of farms in the state, it'll worsen. The last half decade has really changed the financial picture for farmers, says Schnitke.
So we had relatively high good incomes in 2010 through 2012. And then every year since 2012, we've been on a downward trend up till 2015. And then we hit a $500 per farm average net income on Illinois grain farms enrolled in FBFM. So $500 per farm in 2015. Very low, the lowest during our entire period that we've looked at. And obviously not enough to maintain the financial position of farms.
Schnitke evaluated FBFM net income records going back to 1996. FBFM stands for Farm Business, Farm Management, and is a record-keeping service for farmers. The service has not yet summarized net incomes for 2016. However, it is projecting a substantial rebound. It appears net income for grain farms in the service will average somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000. There are three primary reasons for this, says Schnitke.
Again, what led to that was higher yields than trendline yields. We USDA estimated the state yield at 197 bushels per acre. That's 3 bushels off our record yield and set in 2014 of 200 bushels. And soybean yields in the state averaged 59 bushels, which was a record-setting yield. So both of those record-setting yields led to higher incomes in 2016, along with very, very good Arc County payments.
Those are two of the three factors leading to a better 2016. The high yields and sizable Arc County payments, that's the Farm Safety Net from Washington, D.C., aren't likely to be repeated this season.
the third factor very well could be repeated. It's lower input cost, including cash rents and fertilizer. Still, it won't be enough, thinks Schnittke.
For 2017, and we used trend yields, so something near trend across the state, and as well as prices, commodity prices of $3.80 for corn, $9.90 for soybeans. That resulted in lower income in 2017, probably something in the $20,000 range per farm.
Gary Schnittke cautions it's very early in the season and that at this same time last year, 2016, was projected to be a very, very, very bad year. It rebounded. It's also important to note that while higher than 2015 incomes, the projected 2016 incomes do not result in the building of financial reserves on most Illinois farms. Schnittke believes most farms will continue to see the erosion of working capital, potentially leading to the need to refinance outstanding operating loan balances. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Tomorrow we'll be hosting the Soybean Summit at Peoria, Illinois. And if you're there, I look forward to seeing you. You can find out more information about those summits and probably catch some information from them at ilsoy.org. Speaking of websites you should go to willag.org. Pick up your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's over at the Beef House on the 7th day of March, and it's a Tuesday. Always a great day over there. We'll feed you a Beef House meal at the lunch hour. You get a roll and coffee in the morning. We have a dozen of our regular on-air analysts with us. Eric Snodgrass will be there to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, not only for the United States looking forward into the summer months, but what's been happening in South America. And we'll take up agricultural policy. You know, the 2018 Farm Bill discussion started when? Today, as you heard in the newscast this afternoon. And it'll be important for you to understand, as farmers and landowners, where that particular farm bill is headed over the next five-year period. We'll do that on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Get your tickets now.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Get those tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up the 7th day of March at the Beef House. The cost just $30. You can do it online at willag.org or 800-898-1065. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start in the Western Corn Belt today. It's been pretty warm there. What do we know about conditions for the hard red winter wheat growing regions?
Well, most of the hard red winter wheat country has experienced some incredibly warm weather in the past week. Late last Friday and Saturday, we saw temperatures in the 80s and 90s occurring across the region, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, for areas in Oklahoma and Texas where temperatures finally crossed over the threshold for crop development in the soil. And so a little bit of greening was possible at that point, but the ground was still somewhat on the dry side. And then along came Monday into Tuesday, and we had widespread rain across those areas, and that greened up the crop right away. And now we've got ourselves about a week to 10 days worth of steady early season crop development possible here from Oklahoma into Texas. That's going to raise some concern because, as you know, it's only the 15th of February. That leaves a lot of time for crops to get into trouble with frost and freezes. But for the next 10 days, there is no such threat out there in those two states. Now, some of the central plains have also warmed up pretty notably, but we are seeing nightly freezes occurring and will continue in the high plains region in particular. So I don't think we'll get too far ahead of the game out there. A little greening will occur, but nothing in the way of substantial crop development.
Anything to report from South America this week?
Argentina is going back into more rainy weather. It looks like starting tomorrow and going into Saturday, we'll have a very heavy rain occur right across the heart of corn and soybean country and extend into Uruguay. This event will produce multiple inches of rain once again. It looks like there is a risk of some flooding. The highest potential for flooding, though, is in an area that was already flooded once this year. And so the end result of that should not be big on hurting production any further. We've already taken into account the losses from the previous flood event. There may be a few fields that get added into it, but it's not going to be very significant. And then after that, next week in Argentina, we're going to see rain shift a little further to the south and focus on the key sunseed producing areas. And there's a lot of crop there that's ready to be harvested. And putting rain in there over multiple days is going to reduce the quality of that crop in addition to delaying the harvest itself. So we're a little bit concerned about that. In Brazil, you know, the biggest soybean-producing state is Mato Grosso, and it has had way too much rain here recently. They are going to see some improving weather as we go from the weekend into next week, but for right now, they've got some flooding conditions, and they've been harvesting the crop with tremendous amounts of moisture in it because they need to get the second season crop in the ground. So it's going to cost them a lot of money and time at doing the business this way. So hopefully they'll dry down a little bit more next week.
Okay, thanks so much, Drew. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
You bet. Have yourself a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can join us on the 7th day of March over at the Beef House. You get your tickets online. They're just $30 at willag.org.